Wolves Cast, audio on demand.
Welcome into another episode of Wolves Cast Audio on Demand. I'm John Folkey alongside Cal Soderquist here on the Timberwolves Radio Network. Don't forget to check us out on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, iTunes, Timberwolves.com, and of course on your on-demand device, your Alexa units, whether that's the Dot, the Echo, whatever you've got. Just say, hey, Alexa, play podcast Wolves Cast, and it'll get you the newest, most up-to-date episode of Wolves Cast. So plenty of ways to listen to today's podcast and all of our podcasts throughout this season. All right, coming up on this episode, we got a lot to get to, including the top three storylines this week in the NBA, and we got some interesting ones coming up that we're going to discuss. We'll take a look back at Karl Anthony Towns' franchise record-setting game in the win over the Atlanta Hawks, 56 points, a new franchise record. First time Cat has gone over the 50-point mark in his career. We'll listen back to the highlights. Here's some post-game sound coming up from that as well. And Cal, why don't we start right there? As much of a must-win game, I think, as Minnesota had this season, Wednesday against Atlanta. Now, granted, the Hawks came in last in the Eastern Conference, but Minnesota was coming off that tough loss on Monday to Memphis. And, you know, the way things were feeling after that Monday game, you felt like, man, you know, if things continue to slide here, the Wolves might be on the outside looking in. But luckily on Tuesday, they caught a break with a couple of teams that they needed to lose, losing in Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and the New Orleans Pelicans. And then they bounced back with a big win on Wednesday over the Hawks. And you couple that with a Utah loss, and now you're feeling a little bit better here as we wake up Thursday morning with Minnesota leapfrogging the Jazz into the seventh spot in the Western Conference. But that game on Wednesday, it all started with Karl Anthony Towns. Got off to a great start, 26 in the first half, 16 of those in the second quarter. He had 13 points in the third and then 17 in the fourth as the Wolves were finally able to close out the pesky Atlanta Hawks. So all-star type, superstar type performance out of Cat in a game where his team absolutely needed it.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the loss on Monday. Everyone was kind of on edge, and there was definitely sort of not just an urgency, but also in anticipation for this one on Wednesday, because your margin for error continues to shrink when you have results like Monday. And I think that the players knew it, the coaching staff knew it. Tom Thibodeau talked at practice on Tuesday about basically you know, learning from that result and how they can improve, but also flushing it and not lingering on it and letting it become something that sort of hangs over you. So very, very impressive from Cat. Just, you mentioned the quarter-by-quarter scoring. He seemed to have it rolling right from the jump, even though there was only 10 in that first quarter. But for the consistency to be there, you know, 26 at the half, I think, and 39 through three quarters. So We could sort of see that he was on his way to something special. I almost admire that sort of a night more than the nights where someone explodes for 28 in the first frame and then kind of cools off but still manages to do something special. And he did it unselfishly. You know, he got a good amount of shots up, but I think he made the right plays. We all can think of that play where he passed up the opportunity to get that franchise record and instead got Jeff Teague an open triple. So very impressive from him, and I think a night that he won't soon forget, and perfectly timed, too. He was coming off a rather, you know, disappointing or subpar performance, at least for his standards, on Monday, and he answered in a big way.
So here's kind of how things broke down for Cat in that ball game: the 26 first-half points that tied a career high for him in terms of points in a first half. The last time he did that, go back to November of 2016, a night that Cat scored 47, a then-career high against the New York Knicks, but Minnesota lost that ball game. You mentioned the 39 through three quarters, second most in franchise history, trailing only Wally Szczerbiak, who had 44 back in 2003. He had 44 through three quarters against Chicago, a game that oddly enough, or ironically enough, Jamal Crawford suited up for the Chicago Bulls back in that game. And then finishing up with the 56 points, a franchise record, a career high, obviously, for Cat. It also broke Tony Parker's target center record for points in a game played on this floor. Parker had the double nickel way back when, but that game was an overtime San Antonio win. And I believe it was season opener or home opener many, many years ago here at Target Center. So, Cad, setting all those different records. And, you know, we talked about it on Wolves Weekly last night with Dave Benz. And it's great to have Cat as your franchise leading scorer. And that's not a knock to the Mo Williamses, to the Corey Brewers, you know. But Mo, you know, was here for such a short time and didn't have an impact on this franchise the way that Towns did. And before that, you know, I think Corey Brewer had an impact on the franchise from, you know, he was a fan favorite, all those types of things. But in terms of being one of the faces of your franchise, you want that type of a player to own those records. And, you know, obviously Kevin Love had 51, Brew had 51, Mo Williams topped them all with 52. And, you know, all those guys, great collection of talent. But when you talk about, hey, all-time franchise records, I mean, if you go through the Timberwolves media guide, it's Kevin Garnett at the top of just about every single one of those categories, with Towns, Wiggins, and those guys now chasing him and closing in quickly. But those are the types of names that you want at the top of that. And so I thought, you know, from that standpoint, you couldn't be happier for a guy like Carl, who this year, you know, has sacrificed some things for the betterment of the team to make those winning plays that Coach Tibbs talks about all the time. But at the same time that he's done that, he's gotten some recognition in being an all-star and now having his name etched atop the record books. And, you know, that's going to be there, you imagine, considering it was just the fourth 50-point performance in franchise history, that Cat's name in that 56 could be there for a long time.
Maybe, and I think it's almost equally as important to beat that Tony Parker record. You don't want someone else coming into your building and continuing to be able to say, hey, I've got the record in this building. This is my house, so to speak. So I think it was cool that Cat took that back for Wolves Nation and is able to put a Timberwolf up there on top of the Target Center record books. And it was also cool to hear him kind of in the post game basically break down when it started to hit for him, like when he started to realize, you know, he said there everyone was getting undressed and getting ready for the showers. Tibbs had finished his post game sort of wrap up with the guys, and Jamal had kind of said to Cat, hey, you better grab that jersey, save that jersey, don't let them wash that and go throw it back in rotation. And that's when he first realized that this was a special night. And then he said basically he went after the game ball and everything he could. So great stuff from Cat, and really the just how genuine a guy he is. Like you said, he had kind of been building toward a night like this. Like, we know he has the skill set for this, and I think everything just kind of lined up for him in terms of needing to do this for the team. This was a big, huge win that they needed, and he had it going right from the jump.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I talked to Cat on our post-game show, and right as he walked out of the locker room, it was right after their team meeting, he turned to one of the equipment guys, and before he joined us, he said, hey, got to find that ball. Go find that ball. And so it was funny to hear him kind of recount that. A couple more things here about Towns' performance. Becomes the first player in the last 35 years to go for 55 or more points, 15 or more rebounds while connecting on 5 3-pointers. And, you know, over the last couple of years, he joins guys like Russell Westbrook and James Harden in terms of 50, 15, and 5 or more 3-pointers. But, you know, to go over the 55-point mark, I think, is incredibly impressive. And the versatility of what Towns did, I think that, to me, you know, the 56-point, all these accolades, it's great, but it's how he went about it. It was 6 of 8 from beyond the arc, 12 of 15 at the free throw line. You add in the 15 rebounds, 4 of them on the offensive end, the 4 assists, the 1 block shot. That is what we've come to expect out of Karl-Anthony Towns, and that's what fans and the media and front offices are now starting to expect out of 7-footers. And we'll talk more about that when we go 3 in the key. One of our topics is the next 11 players who will impact and change the way the NBA game is playing and played. And I already feel like Kat, Porzingis, Jokic, you know, some of these guys, they have already done that. They have already changed the way the game is being played. And to see Kat get that recognition and go about it in the way that he did, you know, with his versatility. And Coach Budenholzer of the Atlanta Hawks said it before the game. You know, he said his defense, number one, is going to start with trying to stop Towns, but where do you stop him? He can score from all these different areas, and Cat went out, and he scored from all those different areas. So Coach Bud might want to go back and just throw away that defensive plan that they had against Cat. But that, to me, Cal, was kind of what made this so special, is the versatility of the way that he scored.
Well, and you know what else I think gets lost when we look back on a night like last night from Cat? He's 22 years old,
mm-hmm.
and there's still a lot, I think, for him that sort of is unlocked or untapped, and he's a guy who really is a gym rat and takes his craft seriously and loves his summers to try to add things to his game. So just to think about looking back on this a few years from now and what he might be doing. How about this comes from Aaron Gleeman, who's normally a baseball guy, but he had this. So there are three players in the history of the NBA who have had 55 or more points and 15 or more rebounds by age 22 or during their age 22 season. It's Cat, Anthony Davis, and Rick Barry. That's all of it in the history of the league. So that kind of speaks to what he was able to do so quickly. And like you said, the versatile ways, that's what makes him a headache for defenses. I mean, we've talked so much about how he's a little bit better when he starts on the inside and gets that rhythm going there and then takes it to the outside and knocks some shots down, and it's really a pick your poison at that point. But it can start opposite as well. Like, he can knock down a couple threes and really get his rhythm going there, and it's just got to be almost impossible for defenses to try to game plan for. And it really opens up things, too, for guys like Jeff Teague and Andrew Wiggins and Nemanja Bjelica. And once Jimmy Butler's back out there with them as well, I think the options are pretty exciting to consider.
You know, and it's funny, watching that game against Memphis, one of the things that Marc Gasol did so well was those trailing threes.
Yeah.
And when we talk about, you know, how Cat can continue to evolve his game, I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that he works on, you know, in the offseason, is, you know, being that guy that, hey, if you are coming back trailing the play, be ready to shoot and look for him, because Tibbs talks about it all the time. They want to get more three-point opportunities. They've got to find those ways in which they can get them, and, you know, that might be a way that you can utilize Cal's unique Cat. Cal was a unique skill set as well back when you played, but Cat's unique skill set is use him in that trailing three type situation. So we got plenty more to come about Karl Anthony Towns. Our next segment, we'll take a franchise record rewind and take a look back at it. But real quick here to wrap up this first segment, Cal, big win. We talked about the Utah loss. If Minnesota can go into Dallas and take care of business against a Mavericks team that, you know, is out of the playoff picture and they are all sorts and nicked up, and then come home on Sunday against the Utah Jazz, that sets up a huge, huge game. I mean, these two teams jockeying for positioning in the Western Conference, and Minnesota leads that series 2-1. You get a win over Utah and take that season series, and you're going to put yourself in a great, great position. And I would love to see Minnesota, you know, get on a little roll right now. You got this win against Atlanta. Wasn't always pretty, but a win's a win. You go down to Dallas, you take care of business, come in with some confidence, and let's take care of business against the Utah Jazz. Get a couple days off to rest up, prepare for that back-to-back Denver and LA. You've had success against both those teams, and then coming down the stretch, it's back home for two games against Memphis and Denver again. And so some very important games, but you know, you can't look past the Dallas game, but that Utah game is huge and looms large for Minnesota.
I'm excited for Sunday. I would argue that it's the biggest game of the season to date, and I know that it's Easter Sunday, and I think a lot of the fans maybe will get in an Easter brunch before coming to the game, but I hope they're not kind of sleepy and full. They need to be rowdy.
Everyone's going to be hepped up on sugar, so it's going to be perfect.
Nothing but peeps, I guess. Everyone's got to be fired up because, like you said, there's the positioning at stake. I think Utah, they've played with urgency, a playoff-caliber urgency, for quite some time now. And like you said, it's a chance for Minnesota to capture the season series. It's basically worth two games in the standings when you consider the tiebreaker. And neither of those two teams are safe yet, and they both know that, and they both know that that game will go a long way toward their safety in the playoff picture and maybe what seed they end up with. So that should be a playoff atmosphere, and I think the fans can do that on a Sunday. I think they're excited for that kind of electricity to be back inside the Target Center. We think to some of the recent, you know, the comeback coming up short against the Rockets or the big win over the Warriors earlier this month, and Utah did just lose a heartbreaker to the Boston Celtics last night, but They're playing very, very well right now. Rudy Gobert has really anchored things now that he's back and healthy, and that'll be a big one on Sunday.
And don't forget, last time these two teams matched up, Minnesota and Utah, tempers flared, and it was a playoff atmosphere. So their crowd got into it out in Salt Lake City a couple of weeks back. Need that Minnesota crowd to return the favor. A fun, fun atmosphere coming up on Sunday for the Wolves and Jazz. Get your tickets at Timberwolves.com. All right, we're going to take our first time out. Still to come, we'll go three in the key, the top three storylines this week in the NBA. But next, a franchise record rewind right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
Secure your seats and take note, fans, because on April 1st, Ricky Rubio, Donovan Mitchell, and the Utah Jazz are coming to Target Center for a heated Western Conference battle against the Timberwolves. Be there to catch electrifying action from Wiggins, Cat, and the Pack as they look to take down the Jazz for the last time in the regular season. Visit Timberwolves.com to get your tickets now. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north. The Timberwolves are presented by U.S. Bank.
Welcome back to Wolvescast Audio on Demand. John Fokey with you. Cal Soderquist will rejoin me in a few moments as we go three in the key, taking a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. But before we get to that, we talked plenty about it in our first segment. An incredible night Wednesday at Target Center. Karl Anthony Towns rewriting the record books in a win over Atlanta. Let's take a listen back to how it sounded via Alan Horton, the voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Feet beyond the arc on the right side, off a Teague screen, drives in, Cat banks it in for two, and he drew the foul. Muscala will pick it up, and Cat will go to the free throw line for an and one. Inbound, Cat, right angle three on the way, count it, and a foul. A foul away from the play. I think it's going to be a four-point opportunity as Teague will take the free throw. It comes to six, right off the high screen by Towns, gets to the elbow, back out Cat, pump fakes, dribbles to the elbow, zips it inside, a belly layup, good with 0.4 seconds left to go in the half. How about that awareness by Karl Anthony Towns, who caps a monster second quarter. Teague will push it up into the front court here with 5 points, five assists. He goes inside to Belly, drops it back. Towns, who rocks the rim with the right hand. A thunder slam for Karl Anthony Towns as he was positioned at the top of the key. Belly saw him coming right to the rim and led him perfectly.
We wanted him to run the floor harder because we felt like he would be, you know, double teamed, and just trying to get post depth was like a big thing that we wanted him to do. He's going to get a lot of attention in there. The more active he is, the faster he can run the floor, the better it's going to be for him.
Cat up top, locks and loads straight away through, stays perfect. He's 5 for 5 from beyond the arc, giving 42 points tonight. Has tied his career high, so a chance for a new career high right here with a free throw. He knocks it down. 48 points, 14 rebounds for Karl Anthony Towns tonight. A new career high for him. Timberwolves are up by 11 with 3:30 left. Here's Cat, open left angle three. Pump fakes, moves to his left, gives it off to Teague. He'll fire the triple and hit. That is a sensational play for Karl Anthony Towns. Everyone in this building wanted him to shoot it, but he made the right basketball play, set up Teague. The three ball splashes down, and the Timberwolves are up 13 with 2:07 left. Sensational play and a sensational decision by Karl Anthony Towns.
It's just ball fake, making right play. You know, saw Muscala coming out with me. It was doing a hard closeout, pump faked him to go to the side, and, I had a good shot for three, but Jeff had a great shot for three, wide open. So just trying to make the right play and give him the ball.
I think a truly great player not only makes himself great, he makes everyone around him, you know, or better than they are, because his unselfishness and because he commands two players and sometimes three, it's easy. You make the game easy for everyone.
Tyus, two-man game with Jones here. Now Gibson top of the key, back to Tyus, left wing Towns against Muscala. Towns will turn, fire the jumper, on the way, he hits, and it's a three! It's a franchise record, 54 for Karl Anthony Towns.
He was outstanding. He was outstanding, and he just, he was just Cat. He did a little bit of everything, and that's what he does. He can dominate in the paint, but then he also has the capability to, you know, stretch the floor and shoot the three, and he was doing it all for us tonight, and that's what we'll need from him coming down the stretch here.
The horn will sound here at Target Center, and the night has belonged to Karl Anthony Towns, a Timberwolves franchise record, 56 points, 15 rebounds, and 4 assists. He knocked down 6 threes here tonight, hit 19 of his 32 shots, And he went 12 of 15 at the free throw line.
So we came in the locker room. I didn't realize what happened. I just was worried about the final score. We won the game and everything, and everyone's like, you know, bum rushing me and everything. So I didn't realize, you know, what I truly did until, you know, we were getting undressed. Tibbs did his speech. You know, we getting undressed, and they're collecting the jerseys. And Jamal was like, "Cat, you know, keep your jersey." You know, I was like, "What you mean?" And it hit me that I actually, you know, I did what I did, and it was a real cool moment. I think next thing you know, I was asking for the ball. I was asking for everything. So.
Fun night, and great to see Cat put his name atop the Wolves franchise scoring record with that performance, and even better to see it come in a very important win as Minnesota continues their playoff push. Keep it right here. We'll wrap things up by going three in the key, the top three storylines this week in the NBA, next right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
Suit up like the Pack in the newly renovated team store located on the Skyway level of Target Center. Shop the newest in Timberwolves apparel, including jerseys, on-court gear, hats, and more. Visit TimberwolvesTeamStore.com or stop by the team store at Target Center today. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north.
WolvesCast Audio On Demand continues. John Foki rejoined now by Cal Soderquist. Time to go three in the key. Take a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. And we just got news today, Cal, that the Hall of Fame class has been announced, and it'll be officially announced over the weekend. But what we know so far, thanks to Adrian Wojnarowski, Grant Hill, Jason Kidd, and Steve Nash all headed to the Hall of Fame. And I think when I first saw this, you say Jason Kidd, of course, Steve Nash, of course. Sometimes I forget what a great career Grant Hill had. I mean, obviously he was derailed by injuries, but when you go back and look at his body of work and what he did early in his career with Detroit, and then when he did suffer all those injuries and yet still found his way back and played meaningful minutes for a long time, whether it was with Phoenix or even the LA Clippers, this guy put together an incredible career, even though he wasn't necessarily the same player at the end that he was when he came into the league and had such an impact. And many thought he was going to be the guy to kind of carry the torch from that Jordan era into the next era before the injuries derailed him. But man, up to that point, he was incredible, and then found his way all the way back through those injuries to still put together a very solid career.
Yeah, and he is, you mentioned it, but like once you kind of have that what if question surrounding your career, you think about the days with Penny and Shaq and Orlando, and it's tough to shake that. But he's kind of a testament to the fact that he did, and he kept playing, and he got healthy, and he put together a very, very solid career. And I think people still wonder what could have been.
Totally. But you also think of, you know, trying to understand where you're at. And,
yeah,
and we talked about this with Vince Carter, you know, at,
yep,
at some point, some of those things that you're known for go away. And can you evolve and still impact the game and the team? And I think Grant Hill is a great example of that.
I think he is, and I think it's a testament to what he was able to do, because that would bring down a lot of guys, I think, and it probably, for a stretch, probably haunted him, and you can't blame him for that, but he was able to move forward. And even a guy like Steve Nash, more so a pioneer, you know, we're going to talk about some guys who have sort of pioneered and changed basketball more recently, or have the chance to do so as well moving forward, but Steve Nash certainly is a guy who comes to mind as someone who did a lot for this game and sort of redefined. You've always said, or I forget, was it Earl Watson who said he kind of tilted everything on its axis in terms of how he used the floor and in which space he kind of was comfortable in?
Yeah, that was a really fun conversation where back when Earl Watson, I believe at the time he was the interim head coach of the Phoenix Suns, and just after shoot-around, he sat there and held court for quite some time, where he talked about, you know, how Steve became not just comfortable playing along the sidelines, but playing along the timeline and the baseline. And it allowed him to basically just shift the way the court was. And if you're comfortable there, you know, and you think back to, as soon as he said it, I kind of had these flashbacks to watching Steve Nash go baseline and keep that dribble alive. And it forced defenses over. You know, they couldn't necessarily cut off the baseline all the time because he was so fast, quick, and shifty. And it opened up different passing lanes. And now you think about kind of how offenses in the NBA work, and a lot of the time that's what you see. You see a point guard drive down into the paint, and they can thread the needle to a person diving through the lane to score there, or you draw the defense and you kick it into the corner for an open corner three. I mean, there's so many things that you can do when you do tilt the floor like that, and Steve Nash was just absolutely incredible with what he was able to do. and back-to-back MVPs. And you just think about that run that he and Mike D'Antoni and that Phoenix Suns team had, just how successful they were and how they really did change, you know, the way the game was played and forced teams to adjust to that. So I couldn't be happier for Steve Nash, because he's one of those guys that you look back at his career and you say, man, I wish that guy could have won a championship, you know. Obviously, Jason Kidd won a championship, part of that Dallas Mavericks team, and I think Kidd's another interesting success story in the fact that, you know, he came out of the league and he wasn't a great shooter, and yet he turned himself into a three-point threat. And
evolution.
He was a triple-double threat every time he stepped on the floor, one of the best passers, but then, you know, evolving his game to include that three-point shot, which made defenses respect him, which opened up things for his incredible passing. And so each and every one of those guys, I think, was a pioneer of sorts in how their game evolved over the course of their career. And, you know, it's crazy, too, to think back. We think of Steve Nash as a Phoenix Sun, you know, but you also have to think of him as a Dallas Maverick, who we'll see coming up, and wonder what it would have been like had he and Dirk Nowitzki continued to play together and Steve evolved his game with Dirk by his side. I mean, again, pioneers. Dirk, the first true stretch four. I mean, it's fun to play the what-if game, but couldn't be happier for all three of these guys going in.
I agree. Yeah, that's, I mean, there's not much more to say that they're all going to go in. I think they shouldn't have any regrets. They should be very proud of what they accomplished, and you can look around the NBA and see guys who I'm sure have looked to those three sort of for inspiration and how they've had success.
All right, so topic number two then kind of plays off of that as we talk about pioneers. ESPN, of course, did their huge, and it's too long to go through, but they did their huge list of players and coaches who have impacted the game, you know, up to this point. And certainly there was a lot of arguing and so on and so forth. But Kevin Pelton then followed that up with the next 11 players who could change the future of basketball. And real quick, we'll just run through them. Lonzo Ball of the LA Lakers, Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans, DeMar DeRozan of the Toronto Raptors, Luka Doncic, I believe, of Real Madrid. He is not in the NBA yet, but expected to be in the draft coming up this year. Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers, Terrence Ferguson of the Oklahoma City Thunder, Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets, Kristaps Porzingis of the Knicks, Ben Simmons also of Philadelphia, Karl Anthony Towns of the Wolves, Trae Young from the Oklahoma Sooners. So those are the next 11 players that Kevin Pelton of ESPN.com sort of thought were guys that could change the game. And again, I would argue that this group, with the exception of some of the guys that aren't in the league yet, have already changed the game. I mean, in terms of what we expect out of seven-footers, what we expect out of point guards in terms of Ben Simmons, and really what we expect out of young players coming in so polished and ready to go, that I think these guys will continue to change the game, but I would argue they've already changed the game.
Yeah, I would agree. Ben Simmons, already a historic rookie season in terms of what he's been able to do with it, with his rebounding and assist averages and the triple-double numbers. Those are incredible. And like you said, there's a lot of guys with unique skill sets or very defined traits, like Lonzo Ball as a passer, and he's dealt with some injuries this year as well. But his ability as a passer already in year one is pretty incredible and a lot of fun to watch. And I don't think it's just the skill sets that these guys can have an impact with. It's also they're either very socially savvy or very socially in tune with what's going on both in this league and then as a culture as a whole. And even just a guy like Joel Embiid, who's so good with the social media and loves to have fun on there. And also a lot of these guys, Karl Anthony Towns is included, that they know when and how to speak out and how to sort of reach their audience sort of an impactful way, I guess. And so it's been really cool to see that. And I think that also has to be a factor when you're compiling this list of some of these guys, or even a guy like Terrence Ferguson, who decided not to do college basketball for a year and instead went sort of the route that has not been the most successful route for some of the guys recently who have done it. But with a lot of the uncertainty surrounding the NCAA now, maybe that's something that he kind of paved the way and allowed at least it to be an option for guys going forward. So a lot of interesting sort of nuggets to look at there and really just a versatile group of guys, I think.
Yeah, Ferguson, who went down to Australia, played in the NBL rather than going to college, and sounds from this article that the NBL is basically saying, hey, if you players want to do that, we'll pay you $100,000 to do it. So kind of interesting. And, you know, the DeMar DeRozan one, kind of to follow up on your thought that, you know, it's not just how they're impacting basketball, but how they're impacting society. And the nugget in here is, you know, DeMar DeRozan basically opening up the conversation or continuing the conversation about mental health and some of the mental battles that players are going through. You know, and Kevin Love certainly falls into that category after talking about the panic attack that he went through. And so, you know, having that conversation about the mental health side of things, in addition to being a very impactful basketball player, all these guys fall into that category of, yes, they're changing the way the game is being played on the court, but they're also changing the way we talk about certain things. And the athlete activist, I think, is something that we're seeing not just in the NBA, although I think it's, you know, the NBA and the WNBA, I would say, are probably the best in terms of embracing that. But I think that's something that's becoming more and more prevalent and is something that is, you know, going to be sort of where the next step in the evolution of these players is. They've got so much influence that, you know, they're not necessarily only going to be selling sneakers. They're going to be kind of selling society change as well. So a fun list, and certainly, again, hard to argue with any of them. We will wrap up our Three in the Key segment with this. It was a big Wednesday night. Not only did you have Karl-Anthony Towns setting the franchise record with 56 points, 15 rebounds, 4 assists. We talked about, you know, how rare those numbers were. That night, you also had Kemba Walker passing Del Curry to become the Charlotte Hornets' all-time leading scorer in franchise history. And in that same game, LeBron James had 41 points. He matched Michael Jordan with 866 straight double-digit scoring games, the most in NBA history. So, who had the best Wednesday night?
You know, I'm happy for Kemba and I'm happy for LeBron, but I'm going with Cat. I think to get that franchise record is something he won't soon forget. And like we said, to get the Target Center record too, I think is fun and important. And we also mentioned he needed it. He was coming off a tough game on Monday. The team needed it. It was huge for him, huge for his confidence level. And I wouldn't be surprised if he continues, maybe not 50 in the next few games, but monster stat lines, monster big plays, unselfish play. And here's my one thing with the LeBron MJ record. If I'm remembering correct, I don't have anything in front of me, but if I remember right, Kevin Garnett was making his way toward that record in terms of consecutive games with double figure scoring. And there was a game in San Antonio where he got into a shouting match with Tim Duncan and he got ejected before he could get to the 10 points. And I was no more than maybe 11 or 12 years old at the time, and I was so upset that these refs would toss him when he was at least making strides, because he was a player who was obviously very durable throughout his career. And it was fun to – they got in each other's face, both Duncan and Garnett, I remember, and I know that snapped the streak of at least 10 or more points for KG. So I put a little tiny asterisk there next to LeBron's record.
Well, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is third at 787, and that's what I've got in front of me. We'll have to dig a little deeper and go back to that in terms of where KG was on that. But you bring up a great point, because those KG Duncan battles were awesome back in the day. I will say, you know, LeBron's going to get to 10 unless he gets tossed. Even actually in the game he did get tossed, obviously, he made it to 10 or more points. So for me, not that impressive. I mean, obviously it's incredibly impressive, but in terms of, you know, overall, LeBron is the best player in the league right now. He's going to get to 10 points unless he suffers an injury or something like that. To me, I'm going to go with Kemba just for the sake of argument. Becoming your franchise's all-time leading scorer, I think, is incredibly impressive, and especially for a guy at 6'1 who came into this league and we were not really sure whether he was going to be as impactful at this level as he was at the collegiate level with what he did for the UConn Huskies. And yet his game has evolved. He's added that three-point shot. He was always a threat to break you down in the pick and roll or break you down with his crossover and get to the rim. But how his game has really forced defenses to play him a certain way, and then he's got so many different weapons. And anytime you become the franchise's all-time, you know, I think that is huge. And obviously, like, we were trying to dig into whether it was that included the Bobcat era, whether it was only, you know, the Hornets era. So we're still a little unclear on that. But when you become the all-time leading scorer, to me, you know, it speaks to your longevity and what you've been able to do for that franchise and staying in that jersey. I mean, you know, LeBron James, despite all the records he'll hold for Cleveland, there's going to be an asterisk there because he was down in Miami for some of those years. And you think about what those numbers could have been had he stayed. And so part of it is staying in that team's uniform for as long as these guys do to amass all those records. So I'll give a tip of the cap to Kemba, mainly because they lost and they're going to end up on the outside looking in.
I will say Kevin Garnett, fifth on that list.
All
of
right.
So LeBron James is first, MJ is second. Karl Malone, third with 575. Kevin Durant, fourth with 562. KG on there, 411, and it says the streak ended 11-27. It doesn't say who the opponent was or what happened, but I'm going to look it up after this, and we'll find out if he was tossed in that game.
Very good. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Wolvescast Audio On Demand. For Cal Soderquist, I'm John Foki. Be sure to tune in to the playoff push here Friday against Dallas, 7:30 tip-off, 7 o'clock pregame, Sunday against Utah. We'll tip that one off from Target Center at 6 p.m. Get your tickets at Timberwolves.com or join us on our flagship 830 WCCO. We'll talk to you again next week right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.